Previously on the podcast, Erica Berry came on to our episode to chat about how we can all level up our lives with side quests. As I dug a little bit deeper in our questions, at one point, Erica shares that it gets into her life philosophy of believing the journey is more important than the destination, and it's even her go-to second date question. But what if you're more like me and maybe Sophia and have habitually cared about the destination a lot, but you still crave the ability to feel freedom and agency to start a new hobby? In this episode, we'll share our perspectives as trained main questers and some of the mistakes we've learned as we've embarked on new hobbies and side quests. And hopefully you might relate to them and you will find some inspiration to go on your side quests too. Welcome to Bamboo and Glass, where we showcase the abundant possibilities of who you can choose to be. I'm Sophia.
And I'm Tan. Thank you so much for joining us today. Every Sunday, we release a new episode and show you the power of one more perspective. We like to cover perspectives in career, relationships, family, wellness, just to name a few. So in our most recent Substack post, which by the way, we put out posts every week alongside the episodes, I had a couple questions for you, Sophia. You got the chance to author that post and you mentioned a few side quests you've embarked on since having your initial conversation with Erica. And I just have been dying to ask you, what led to jogging in the snow?
Well, first of all, as you can see, a side quest doesn't have to be a hobby. It can literally be a 5-minute experience that you do just for the plot, as they say. So honestly, there was no thinking behind this. It was snowing in Seattle recently. I looked outside and I was like, I should just do it for the plot. I'll just go run around and just get to say that I jogged in the snow and get to put it in the newsletter. So the newsletter was a fun form of accountability. Yeah.
How did you feel as you were jogging in the snow?
I felt so cool. It's moments like that that reinforced to me that I'm someone who is capable of trying new and silly and fun things and not regretting it afterwards.
Mm-hmm. I love that. And you also mentioned that the conversation that inspired the episode was particularly timely. So I'll quote you here. I'm fortunate to have more free time these days, which is great, but also increases my expectations of myself to try new things. And when I don't follow through, I wallow in self-disappointment. Mm-hmm. Could you elaborate a little bit more about like in what way this episode was timely and what it means to wallow in self-disappointment with these expectations that you've created?
Yeah. So I, for the last year or so, I was really busy with a lot of things with like my family and my health and work. And now all these big challenges are behind me and I get to look at a blank calendar on Saturdays and Sundays. Mm-hmm. And I had all these ideas for things that I want to do. But then every time I thought of an idea, I would find myself shrinking away from it because I was afraid that I didn't have the follow through for that new idea because I didn't have the follow through for my past 10 ideas. And this timing is actually perfect that we're talking about this because literally this past weekend, I was like, Sophia, you literally, for your work on a tool to help people make videos and become more comfortable making videos. Mm. And look at you. Tan has asked you to make one TikTok video in the last month. And have I done that? No, I have not. And so all of Saturday felt bad about not making the video and was just like hoping an idea to come. All of Sunday felt bad about myself because we can get into this later. I have this whole like thing about TikTok and making videos and showing up. And it's like, you wouldn't expect that I have any sort of inhibition about it because we have this podcast and we're like share some
personal
things. And you
work as a product manager on a video creation tool.
Exactly. But there's a whole host of things that held me back. But literally, Tan, Sunday night, I was like, you know, there's a love story that I have really loved. And I just think that it needs to get more attention. And so I went, it's from New York Times Modern Love. I screenshotted the story because our friend Van Nguyen the other day was like, oh, I don't have a subscription to the New York Times. Can you send me some screenshots? Mm. So I literally went back to those photos and posted a TikTok video. There was no voice, no face, nothing from me. It was literally just screenshots of that article. and it absolutely blew up. Well, in my definition, blew up.
I think that's in most people's definition of
in less than 24 hours. Okay, it has hit 500,000 views on TikTok, and beyond the views and you know those metrics, I think what really hit me was seeing the comments and seeing how many people from all different walks of life were commenting and saying that they wish they had seen this sooner. And like, this was a story I had known about for years and that my friends and I had talked about. And like, it's a story that meant so much to other people. And it didn't even take me, I didn't even have to be like vulnerable or personal. All it just took was me putting in 10 seconds to screenshot it and share it. And so I think that's a pretty fun, you know, feedback. Discovery. Or like feedback for something that honestly, Khan, like if I think back to the first time I wanted to make a video on TikTok and share some part of my life, it's probably been years. And I don't think I've honestly like really tried doing it.
Well, I know you're saying that it only takes 10 minutes to like make this video because you had all the screenshots already, like you just add some music and that's all you needed to do. But we definitely don't want to discount the days or the months or the years, right? Of how much it took to get to that activation threshold even to finally take the plunge and make that video. So I see both the excitement and also like, wow, we also need to acknowledge that sometimes it takes a lot of time.
Years.
Yeah. And some, even though the actual tangible steps of making the video are really easy and really quick to do. But I'm really excited to also later on learn more about what are some of the demotivations, I guess, that you personally experience.
Yeah. So Erica's episode landed so perfectly with me. How about for you? What did you think as we were chatting about SideQuest?
Yeah, I think for me in my own life, I guess maybe our timelines are a little bit offset by like a couple of months because I ended up making my transition into a new job in October. So that was at this point like 4 or 5 months ago. And that was where I found myself having a lot of time. I think though, I felt like I was such a workaholic my whole life, especially after college. Like, even while working as a software engineer, I was always trying to make films or trying to write or trying to connect with people and trying to network. Like my brain was always going. Yeah, it always had an objective in mind and something that needed to an action plan. And so going into this new job, I very actively told myself I was going to deprioritize. And so in that sense, I was kind of, I guess, telling myself to stop being a main quester and try to live my, and it wasn't explicitly that I wanted to go on side quests, but it definitely opened up more space to do side quests. And so I feel like in the last couple of months, I've done a lot of new things. And so talking to Erica has only given me more motivation and more other, like more reasons and perspectives to consider when I find myself in those slumps. Because inevitably, like obviously, as you try new things, like you can still be demotivated and you can end up being really hard on yourself, especially when it's something that's like so hardwired into my brain. I'll give a couple of quick examples. I think it's hardwired into my brain that these side quests or these hobbies should lead to something purposeful and should lead to something that fits into the identity that I have curated of myself. Or I feel like if I'm going to do something new, I need to have decided to make a commitment out of it. And so I think I've been able to do a lot of trials and errors in the last couple of months and have been better able to be attuned to myself. And also realizing that consistency can look like every single day, or it could look like once a year. And once a year is actually great consistency too.
Yeah. What you're saying about kind of the pressure of committing to something reminds me of something my mom used to say when I was younger. She's like, if you're going to do something, you might as well do it well. And there are a lot of ways that that perspective is really helpful, but in terms of hobbies and just having fun, I think that perspective can be a little bit limiting and can force you and can increase the barrier to trying new things because you're like, well, what if I haven't found the right teacher or the right materials or the friends to do it with or the perfect time to do it with? You know, for a hobby, you don't really need to overthink it. Just like do it.
Yeah. I mean, kind of piggybacking off of that, I feel like high school is really the time where I think I really formed the belief that I have to do things well or I have to follow through on things because everything was geared towards a college application. Mm-hmm. Every volunteer opportunity, every extracurricular that you do needs to go on the college application. And it's always, it was like imperative to start sooner rather than later. If I had considered starting something junior year, that would be too late. And it could come off as I am unable to make commitments and I am unable to to just follow through on things. And so that really hindered me in college, actually, when I started seeing people join new clubs junior year, senior year, and me feeling like,
what?
I could never do those things because I had already told myself it was too late if I didn't start beginning of freshman year. And I remember leaving college having a lot of regrets of, I can't believe I just couldn't let myself try these things. And obviously that's being hard on myself by putting it all on me. Like there's all these things that I have learned and internalized and had in some ways positive feedback loops, like clearly like doing those things and having those beliefs led to you into a Stanford. Great school. Exactly. Yeah. And so it was really hard to come up with reasons as to why I shouldn't continue believing those things in college. And so that I would say college is really an area where I feel the most regret in terms of not getting around to trying new things.
Yeah. In college, I also felt there were some classes that were really hard. So I really leaned on artistic things I did outside of class. Like I've always been good at dance and singing and drawing and piano. And it was good because those things were familiar, happy things I could always depend on. But in some ways it was bad because I never really gained the confidence that comes from trying new things. Because there's a lot of confidence that that comes from continuing to do something that you know you're already good at. But there's also a different type of muscle and confidence that comes from trying new things, which is a muscle that I'm like really, really trying to build nowadays.
Yeah, I want to hear more specifically about these side quests or hobbies of yours. So in this episode, we'll primarily be talking about hobbies. But remember, side quests can be things like jogging in the snow, mundane errands, inconveniences, and bouts of fun. But I think hobbies is a more colloquial or common term that a lot of people might gravitate towards. And that's also where my main quester mind usually goes. So first question for you, what's a hobby that you've always wanted to start but never got around to?
Okay, so this is a hobby that I actually don't even talk much about on our podcast, even though we've had like 200 something episodes.
I'm so interested. What is it?
But I'm obsessed with personal style. And so you saw a bit of this when we went shopping, like clothes shopping. But I, growing up doing art, I just have been obsessed with looking at how colors look differently on different people, shapes, fabrics, how they drape, how they move. And so secretly, I've always had this wish to start like a personal style TikTok channel where I talk about, as someone who actually, I have a pretty unusual body type where I have a very long neck and very long torso, but in comparison, in proportion, shorter legs. And so I've had to be very careful and intentional with how I dress in order to achieve more harmony and like balance in my appearance. And I just know I probably spend hours a day clothes shopping online, browsing, clothes browsing, not shopping, browsing, just
not dropping money.
money. I have thousands, tens of thousands of screenshots of clothing inspiration that I love just walking around on the street and looking at how clothes fit on different people's body types. So, that's something that I've never gotten.
This is really precious. I mean, I feel like the OGs will remember Goodwill Glow Up. And I think even back then we had even briefly talked about like sending each other like outfits that we want the other person to try on. I will gladly be your mannequin. I will gladly let you style me anytime. And I also give you full permission and allowance to do so on our Bamboo TikTok if you ever want to. But okay, well, how come you haven't done it?
It's just hard to start. I think the tipping point for me would be if I made a video and it got a lot of love and appreciation from people around the world who have no obligation to like me, that would encourage me to make videos more.
Oh, but that's like a chicken and egg kind of situation, right? Exactly. Like you first need to have that first video in order to receive the feedback. Yeah. Well, maybe the modern love TikTok will be an offhand motivation for you to try something new that you haven't tried before.
How about you? What is something that you've never gotten around to, but you've wanted
to? I've also never told you this, Sophia. So
secrets are being spilled.
Secrets. This, I feel like this episode is so whimsical and so precious. In college, I had always wanted to join the Taiko team.
What?
It's like there's choreography involved too. And like, I love watching dancing as well. And that was a hobby that I had always wanted to start for a long time too, but finally got to start in November. They were always so happy when they play taiko and they're always yelling and chanting and shouting alongside each other. And it never felt like performative or fake either. Like it generally looked like they were a tight-knit community and like had so much fun. But get this, I talked myself out of it 3 times. So every year from freshman year to junior year, because I told myself it conflicts with orchestra rehearsals and that I would need to do orchestra because that's the thing I've been doing this whole time. But I didn't even join orchestra ever. Like that makes, make sense? Like how does that make any sense in your head? Yeah. And so it was like, my brain kept finding excuses as to why I couldn't do it. Yeah. And I still want to like, hit some drums at some point. Like I think that's such a cool skill to have such impeccable rhythm. When I play violin, I'm always rushing, man. Like I'm always like about to fall off the cliff. And so I always thought it was so cool that percussionists are people who are so steady. They are people who everyone can depend and rely on all the time. So
okay, so deep down, what do you think is your fear? What do you think is holding you back? Like what's the root of these excuses?
That one is for sure like misalignment with who I perceive myself to be. It's like I am the orchestra violinist. Like I'm not a taiko performer. And so I was the one who put myself in a box like for so many years and kind of like missed my chance to do a lot of those things. And I don't necessarily think that I still want to do that, but like that same principle applies to dance. I saw friends who would join like the beginning hip hop dance crew at our school. And I'd always be like, that's so cool. I had 3 littles in my sorority. They all were in dance and I would always watch them and cheer them on. But in the back of my head, I was always like, I wish I could be up there, but I can't get myself to because one, again, never even tried it ever in my life. And I know some people, you know, have different dance backgrounds too, and so it's a little bit easier to pick that up. And so I was really self-conscious of being really bad, first of all, and performing on stage and being bad on stage. And then two, again, by the time past freshman year, I was like, oh, I can't join a beginning dance group. Like it's a waste of my time in some ways.
Dude, Tan, I'm even worse than you. Get this.
Really?
I've done dance for years. And I actually don't even talk. I don't even think you know anything about my past with dance. I did ballet, Chinese dance. I did ballroom dance in college. But somehow there's this fine line between ballroom dance and all these other forms of dance in hip hop. Because for me, it's like, I feel like hip hop is like a whole culture in itself. Like you have to be into the music and the way people dress. And like you have to have the charisma and coolness. And to me, that's a whole new world of dance that is totally unrelated to ballroom.
Honestly, I think that really is comforting for me to hear as someone who does have a lot of dance experience. And for me, I just know I don't look good when I dance because I'm like so beginner. But what really helped me finally start in November was I just randomly mentioned like around my birthday to 2 of my friends that I've been thinking about taking dance classes because now I had all this free time. And they're like, oh my God, I'd be so down. And they also are not dancers. And for me, that was really great accountability to then be that person that you know I am of like holding people accountable to go do something. I can't do it by myself, but I can do it if there's two other people involved, two other people who are in it with me.
And so you're like tigering your friends, but then also tigering yourself.
Yeah, but by tricking myself into thinking I'm tigering my friends first. And so we went and it was so fun. And one of them, we actually just went to dance class yesterday. Time we do it, we're always like high-fiving each other. And honestly, Sophia, if you do get a chance to go to like a hip-hop class, I really, really encourage it. Like the energy of the class is so inclusive and welcoming. Like I saw this like 60-something-year-old Asian lady dancing with us. And she was so good. And everyone was like screaming for her. Like even in a funny way. If you're actually an outlier in the age range, like if you're really, really young, or if you're really like a lot older than the people, than the average person in that room, there's like, they get the most screams and the most cheering. It's really, really precious.
That's so sweet.
Yeah. And I think the biggest takeaway from this is that I don't see people who are so good at dancing and think and get intimidated. I think I thought it would be similar to how I am with violin, where I see someone who's so good and then I'm like, I feel really competitive, or I compare myself to them. Mm-hmm. Versus here, I see people who are so good and my jaws dropped onto the ground and I'm like, oh my God. And I just feel really inspired and really excited for them. And so that's been a really refreshing feeling to have, that I don't think I would have ever felt if I hadn't tried to take a dance class. So
That's so wonderful. We both have these secret hobbies, now they're out in the open and our
listeners, and now everyone's gonna ask, hey, where's your personal style TikTok account? Okay, in terms of hobbies that we have tried then, what's a hobby that felt really easy for you to pick up versus one that had a huge activation threshold to get started? And we'll kind of go into the differences as to why they felt so different for you.
I think skincare was easy because it just, the packaging is so bougie and you just buy it and you go on TikTok, you look for the inspo, you buy it. You fell for the
aesthetics.
I did. Honestly, that's how they get me and I'm grateful they got me. What was hard is exercise. I would say indoor exercise feels boring and outdoor exercise is really limited by Seattle weather.
Yeah. So does exercise feel like you just have really limited options, that none of them you like, and it's really hard to get creative to find an option that works for you? I see. Yeah. I similarly also have a huge activation threshold with exercising. I think it has a lot to do with feeling like I'm supposed to stay committed to something. And also, literally, I used to die doing a Chloe Ting video, and I was like, how the heck am I going to keep this going for 5 days? I'm hobbling and wobbling every single day already. Like, it's not a good feeling. But cooking has felt really easy to pick up because I think about food all the time. A girl's got to eat anyway, and I get bored really easily. And so I end up craving new recipes. And I think the Asian mentality of not measuring things has saved my ass, because there's no need for perfection with cooking. Yeah, I could just eyeball things and trust my taste buds. And as long as it tastes good to me, that's all that matters.
And I think for me, that's why cooking is easier than baking. Because with baking, you do have to be a little bit more precise. Because
it's more like chemistry and...
Right.
Like, yeah.
With cooking, it's like nothing's going to happen if I add like too much soy sauce. It's fine.
I'm sure that we have... in our lives started and stopped different hobbies. What's been kind of beneficial for you of starting and stopping new hobbies? And does that ever discourage you from starting a new hobby in the future?
I think what's so beneficial is having different anchors for my identity. So if work isn't going well, I have other things. If podcast isn't going well, I have other things. And it just makes me feel like a more full and well-rounded person. It makes my life feel like it has more variety.
Like, do you ever feel like you have too many hands in different places though? Like, do you ever like get burnt out, or do you ever
in college? Yes, but now I think I could benefit from more jars to stick my
More distractions in a way. I love that. I think for me, what's been great about starting and stopping new hobbies is that I've started to notice patterns in my behavior and my reactions. So that actually allows me to be much smarter with my workarounds, my creativity, and be more efficient with decision making. So in a way, it's kind of like ruthless experimenting by just like throwing myself into the deep end and trying things. Mm. So for example, I've taken a lot of different group workout classes in the past, especially when I lived in New York. I tried Rumble, which is like this like boxing HIIT class, it's like water filled punching bags. My fingers hurt so much from punching the water bags. I've tried bar. I would die every time I go to bar. I also tried a Pilates class and tried aerial yoga. So I did try a lot of different things. But it took like 10 different group workout classes for me to realize I don't like group workout classes. And now I can be like, okay, if I don't like group workout classes, what are other things that I can do? And so it's kind of helped me narrow down my scope of different things I can try. Because it's like, aside from group workout classes, there's YouTube tutorials, there's just going to the gym or like going with a friend and doing those things. And so I feel like I became a lot more open to those, I guess, solitary options after having tried the community ones, because I just took everyone's advice of like accountability and community is great, and then I had to realize for myself, nah, I'm not like everyone else. I don't like group workout classes.
That's a really good observation and a good note that you don't have to listen to everyone's advice. You just have to pay attention to yourself.
Yeah.
All right, let's get into some concrete tips of mistakes we've made or regrets that we've had as noobs in trying new things.
My first one is spending so much time calculating in my head how much money I'll lose if I don't follow through or don't like it. I think I started getting this in my head because at Google, actually, one of the perks they gave was a gym membership subsidy. And it was a partial subsidy, and they included in their reasoning that the reason it's a partial subsidy is because money has proven to be like a really great source of accountability. And so you can, and so that'll motivate you more to like make the most follow of through. The money that you're spending. That kind of backfired on me though, because then I started like obsessively calculating how much money I could potentially lose if I don't follow through with things. Being able to hear Erica actually talk about her whole failing adventure of trying like gel and acrylic nails and stuff, and how she's like, I lost so much money from doing that. I honestly, that was really refreshing for me to hear, because it's like, yes, you can have monetary loss, but you can also have like a fun story to tell as well.
And there's
a lot of other benefits that can come out of it and value that isn't always monetary based. And so I think just sometimes maybe figure out like how much disposable amount of money you have to be able to try new things. That way you will feel less guilty or less ashamed if that money, you know, doesn't go anywhere. But remember that that money does always translate into some sort of value, whether it's you getting to say you checked out off your bucket list, or you getting to have fun in the event, or you getting to have a silly, funny, failing story later on.
Or even deciding or budgeting ahead of time how much money you're willing to spend, because sometimes, like when you're excited about a hobby, you might genuinely be willing to spend, let's say, $50 a month. But by the time you actually have to buy the thing, you're like, oh my God, $50 feels like so much. But if you've like pre-promised to yourself that this $50 is just set aside for hobbies, I think it makes it easier to say yes and spend the money.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think there's, again, like different gives and takes that you can do. So like, let's say the hobby was like $50 a month. I think about if you regularly get coffee, like how many coffees is that? And it's like, haha, I lost 10 coffees. Like, oh, well, like I don't get my caffeine for 10 days of the month, but that's okay.
Yeah. I like it. What are other mistakes that you've made?
I think you hinted at this earlier and I'd love to get your take too, but worrying about doing the new thing the right way. So I think sometimes I do think this is valid because it could involve safety. For example, I should learn how to surf the right way so I don't end up drowning. But when that's coupled with the previous thought of being unwilling to invest monetarily into like a trained professional or lessons or something, it becomes accumulated into an even bigger barrier as a result. And so I think it's also been internalized because I watch a lot of K-pop survival shows where the judges will be like, you're singing the wrong way. Like, how did you learn how to sing like that? And that's really upsetting to hear now that I think about it, because then it's like, well, sometimes like it's okay to at least them learning the quote unquote wrong way got them to the point where they could interact with these people and, you know, get support and love and acceptance and learn other ways to do things. Like, is trying to do it the right way really going to stop me from doing this hobby for another year? And if it is, then maybe it's worth doing it the wrong way with just the info that you have. And at least you've tried and you can experiment and learn along the way.
It's like that saying, a lot of things that are worth doing at 100% are also worth doing at 20%.
I don't know. How do you relate to that, that demotivation that I just shared about doing things the right way?
Yeah, I think that's why things like running or cooking feel lower barrier to me, because I don't have to buy a ton of equipment or or work with someone and pay someone to help me. So I think it's the choice of hobby can also help with that.
Absolutely. My next mistake or regret that I've had is that is the time that I spend figuring out before even trying whether it's a one-off thing or a regular commitment I want to make. And I guess this kind of goes back to like, how much of this am I incorporating into my identity? Is it a check off the bucket list type of thing, or is it something I really want to become an expert in, which kind of doesn't really make sense because like I haven't even tried it. Like, I have no idea if I even like it. But a more helpful reframing has been letting myself always set the expectation of like, let's just do it one time. And the way I convince myself to be okay with doing it one time is by asking myself, which would I regret more? Doing it one time and at least saying I gave it a try, or never ever getting around to doing it in my entire life?
I love that. That's so good.
All right. I want to hear what's a mistake that you've made in the past.
I think for me, I worry a lot about what other people think. So in response, I try to get really concrete. Like, can I actually name a single person? Like, put a name, put a face to the worry. And why do I worry that this person's going to judge me? Or like, why do I even think this person's going to judge me? And then third, if they really did judge me, if in the worst case scenario, they were gossiping about me to other people, how is that tangibly going to impact me? And when I try to break that worry down into something really concrete, I often realize that I just have this vague feeling, this like cloud of worry, but it's not anything concrete. And so that's what actually pushed me to make that TikTok video.
I love that. When you say also that you worry about what other people think, is it related to identity, like the way that I've been talking about it, or is it other things too?
I think I'll talk about TikTok specifically because that's been the biggest mental barrier for me. In my mind, there's still this feeling that like, oh, people make TikToks because they want to get attention. But recently, I've been changing who I watch videos from. And I specifically try to watch videos by people who, it's just so clear that their passion for the topic is just bubbling over. And I think I need to reinforce to myself that there are a lot of creators who are very passionate. And there are a lot of people like me who just truly like love fashion. Like, I don't even need to put my name on my account. I just want to like talk about clothes and find other people who care about clothes. Because I think the more I follow these people, the more that I see that these people have followers who really, really love them. And so it's like, well, maybe I will also find people and friends around the world who love clothes the way that I love clothes.
And you kind of, so do you find that the sense of community also is a really positive form of feedback for you? Yeah, I love that. That actually is really similar to the last mistake that I've made, which is always trying to do things on my own. Sometimes it's like really hard to think of someone who would be interested in joining me on whatever side quest I want to go on. For example, if I could be completely unsure of who would be interested, and if I am aware that someone has done that side quest before, I usually get intimidated into thinking that they're so expert level, like why would they want to be with a beginner like me? But I've been challenging myself to randomize who I mentioned to that I just want to try a hobby. And it's not in the vein of asking them, like, do you want to join me on this hobby? It's just saying, I'm trying this hobby out. And that's shown me surprisingly that there will be people who've also had the same thought, but just haven't had a chance to vocalize it for whatever, you know, beliefs they have or other, whatever reasons they have internally. And they were also in the same position of not knowing who else would be down to try that. And so it becomes really enjoyable beginner accountability for all of you. And I think that's another sense of community of being around other people who are down to try the same new thing with you.
Because you're all going through the same nervousness.
Exactly. Yeah. Okay. So we talked a little bit about things that haven't really worked out for us in the past. And so moving forward into like trying new things and going and starting new hobbies and going on new side quests, what tip do you have that can help people lower the activation threshold of like going outside of their comfort zone and trying out a new hobby?
I think that even if the hobby is a total flop and you spend a lot of money on nails and they just don't work out, you know, all the fun stories that Erica told about the graveyard of side quests, I think what I always remind myself of is when I try something new, I reinforce to myself that I am capable of trying something new, and the confidence boost that comes with is invaluable to me. And I don't need to be good at doing nails or doing my hair or doing my makeup, but I think just growing that general sense of confidence about myself prepares me for the next hobby that I want to try.
I love that. I would say for me, in terms of lowering the activation threshold, has a lot to do with what's in our tagline, actually, which is like the power of one more perspective. This is a quote from Austin Kleon in his book, Steal Like an Artist, where he says, "You don't get to pick your family, but you can pick your teachers, and you can pick your friends, and you can pick the music you listen to, and you can pick the books you read, and you can pick the movies you see. So you are, in fact, a mashup of what you choose to let into your life, and you are the sum of your influences." And so in a practical sense, if I go back to the hobby of fitness, which historically has had a really high activation threshold for me, I've explicitly trained my TikTok feed to like serve me so much fitness content. And this is actually really similar to what happened to me when it comes to watching makeup videos in high school and college. I just internalized so much knowledge and info about these things that even if I'm not actively trying those things, I am able to learn so much to the point where I might as well give it a try and like kind of put that into practice. And the amount of fitness info I know now in the last month than I've ever known in my whole life is kind of wild. And it's just by letting yourself be exposed consistently to those people or those influences and perspectives.
I love that. Oh my gosh. What a happy, heartwarming conversation we've gotten to have about starting a new hobby. Thank you for suggesting that we do this follow-up to Erica's episode. And for anyone who's interested in hearing Erica's perspective, hearing the original conversation about side quests versus main quest, tune in. We'll link the episode below. Erica is amazing. She's one of my closest friends from college, and she's done just so many things in her life and done them so boldly and shamelessly. And just listening to her perspective and her and like feeling her energy is so fun. You'll definitely love the episode. So thank you so much for tuning in. If you found any part of this episode insightful, encouraging, or helpful, please think of a friend who would also enjoy it and share the episode with them and let them know that we are on every podcasting platform, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, you name it. This episode was actually in part inspired by our Substack, where I got to share about jogging in the snow. So if you do want to see more of our Substack, you can follow us at bambooandglass.substack.com. Substack is just a newsletter. You can subscribe and hear quick snippets from us every week where we talk about a new episode, an episode that we're thinking of, a reflection question, and some media recommendations. So thank you again for tuning in. We will see you next Sunday.
Bye.